Shift live here on 101.9 WDET. Hope you're having a great Thursday afternoon. I'm Amanda LeClaire, and coming up on the dance party, we'll get into some great indie and experimental and electronic albums released 20 years ago in the year 2002. That's on the dance party in about 40 minutes. First up, it is Thursday at 1 o'clock, and that is when we bring in our own Nate Bender. He is a gaming journalist here in the city of Detroit. And we started this segment about 2 months ago because the gaming industry in the U.S. and across the globe is a multi-trillion dollar industry. And for millions of people, gaming has become a vital connection and community. The size and scope of the gaming world has also brought a whole ton of issues: cultural, political, labor, economic. Those challenges have rocked the gaming industry in recent years, as well as the cultural influence that games and gamers have has increased. So in light of all that, we brought in this segment on Thursdays to talk about the many facets of the industry with Nate Bender. Nate is the host of the podcast Let's Play, a daily gaming news podcast, and the creator of Checkpoint Radio, also a colleague here at WDET and audio engineer. Welcome back to Culture Shift, Nate.
Thanks, Amanda. So it's been about 2 months that we've been doing this segment, and now we finally have
we have a name.
So we're going to be calling this Nate's One Update. And thank you to the couple of folks that had piped up with their own name suggestions over on Twitter. But I think the One Update is is the winner. It wins for some clever wordplay there. So I wanted to follow up on what we talked about last week, because we had a very serious conversation about the types of harassment that goes on in the video game industry. And since then, you know, what really started this conversation was Clara Sorrenti, who's an open, outspoken trans activist who was swatted back on August 5th. Really started a lot of these conversations, and where it has gotten to is a very, very strange place. So just to kind of remind everyone, Clara Sorrenti, a.k.a. Keffels, was swatted back on August 5th. Swatting is where someone will call in an erroneous emergency response report with the hopes of getting a SWAT team to respond.
A whole SWAT team.
Whole
responding.
SWAT team.
That's so scary.
And she was woken up with guns in her face, and you know, the London, Ontario police acted like it was an open investigation and that she was the suspect. Really, this has really escalated. She's since moved out of her home. She was staying at some hotels in the Ontario area. And even since then, she was getting pizzas that were showing up delivered to her birth name, and a pretty clear indication that she was continuing to be harassed. Well, it turns out that at least some of this harassment was originating from a website called Kiwi Farms. And this is a website that is essentially dedicated to doxing and stalking what the site has termed lol cows, because you milk them for the lols, for the laughs, right?
Oh my gosh.
It's really some awful, awful stuff. And this Kiwi Farms, this website, has been linked to a number of suicides in the last couple of years. Julie Terryberry in 2016, Chloe Segal in 2018, and most recently David Grinder in 2021. And these are just organized, concentrated harassment campaigns. And the targets of these usually tend to be trans people or even people with autism.
That's horrifying. And that's what I wanted to ask, was Keffels being targeted because they're trans?
Yes, an outspoken member of the trans community. The more attention you seem to get, the more mainstream attention, the more positive attention you seem to get, seems to get their attention as well, which is, you know, really, really sad. So she's been trying to run a counter campaign to get Cloudflare, which is the hosting platform for the website Kiwi Farms, to remove the content. And so far, there has been some very strange recent developments. as in Marjorie Taylor Greene, has also been swatted in the last couple of days.
Whoa.
And allegedly, the origins of those were also Kiwi Farms. So we've got Keffels and we've got Marjorie Taylor Greene now both pushing and putting pressure on Cloudflare to remove the Kiwi Farms website.
Is there anyone have any idea who owns or who runs Kiwi Farms?
Yes. And there is an immense amount of pressure being put on these individuals. This is the same, you know, this is the same hosting service that had once hosted the Daily Stormer and had since taken it offline due to public pressure against them. And I think the ultimate goal of what's happening here is to also get Kiwi Farms taken offline permanently. Currently, Kiwi Farms is inaccessible. There was rumors that that was due to a DDoS attack. Turns out that the people who run Kiwi Farms can't get in touch with the people who are actually running the nuts and bolts of the website. So there is it's a developing story. Things are very fluid, but we're definitely watching the story there.
And again, poor Keffels has had to leave their country.
Yeah, she's now she has stated she has left Canada. She's now in Europe. And, you know, we wish Keffels, you know, all of the safety and, you know, it's really just a terrible situation that has arose. And, you know, this website is really something that, you know, more people should know about. And I think that Cloudflare has a real, you know, a real responsibility to, you know, take a site like this that violates, by the way, their own terms of service off of their service. So some of the other big stories that we're tracking right now in the gaming industry, Sony PlayStation is currently being sued for $6 billion in UK courts. Consumer rights champion Alex Neil alleges that Sony PlayStation has abused its position as the console market leader. So it's imposed things like a 30% commission on all sales that are done through the PlayStation Network. And this has forced video game companies to really ramp up their monetization. And Alex Neil says that this is really Sony's fault and is bringing a $6 billion class action lawsuit against Sony. Potentially 9 million UK gamers would be affected by this and could see between $80 and $670 in compensation from Sony. The criteria is that you have to have owned a PlayStation console since August 19th, 2016, live in the UK, and purchased digital PlayStation games.
Now, is that something that folks who own a Sony PlayStation here in the U.S. might want to keep their eye on?
If they maybe spent some time in the U.K., if they bought their system while they were in the U.K., and especially if they made any purchases while they were in the U.K., then yes, they would actually qualify for something like this. But it's a big deal because we don't see class action lawsuits like this being brought against massive gaming companies, at least not getting to this stage. A lot of them are usually thrown out of court. And one of the other big things that we're taking a look at is Embracer Group has gone on another spending spree, more consolidation in the video game industry, spending $787 million to acquire, I think it's 8 total studios, including Middle Earth Enterprises, and this is probably the biggest one, who owns the intellectual property rights for the film, video games, board games, merchandising, theme parks, and stage productions for J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings trilogy and The Hobbit.
Wow, that's a big ticket there.
That
wow.
is, yeah. And to get that, along with like 8 other studios for $787 million is something that is quite surprising. I know that there was a Lord of the Rings video game project that was recently canceled by Amazon. So we'll have to see what this new destination at Embracer Group has for the Lord of the Rings franchise. So it could be some very exciting things that are going on there. But a couple of other studios that got sucked up in this: Tripwire Interactive, the studio behind the games Killing Floor 1 and 2, Rising Storm, and Red Orchestra. Tuxedo Labs, Singtrix, Limited Run Games. So some very minor studios in there. But, you know, Embracer Group really looks to be taking the opportunity to acquire as many studios as it possibly can.
So could people probably see more merchandise, more games involved with Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit coming,
you know,
their way?
It depends. I think Embracer Group, with how many IPs it now has under its belt, it's going to depend on what they prioritize. I think that there's the possibility of seeing that, or, you know, Embracer Group could let it languish for years. We really don't have a sense of that. So this week was also Gamescom, which is the largest gaming convention in the world. It happens in Germany, and it's going down from August 24th through the 28th. So there's still a lot of news that's coming out of Gamescom. In fact, I was just watching some press conferences before I came and did this segment. We had some pretty interesting announcements. Opening Night Live is something that Jeff Keighley, a very noted gaming journalist here in America, does every year for Gamescom. And we got some pretty interesting announcements. And by the way, this is their first in-person event since 2019. So I think everyone's very excited to get, you know, back into the same physical space. But we got a great trailer for a really interesting game called Dune Awakening.
I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration.
All right, so there is a new Dune game on the way. The trailer looked beautiful. You sent that to me this morning. The visuals look absolutely insane. But it's not the book, and it's not the movie. It's
right.
A whole reimagining of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. It's its own sort of reimagining. You know, obviously it's based off of the books, the classic books by Frank Herbert, but it does not take its visual styling cues from the recently released movies, which had a very unique and distinct visual style. This is very much its own thing. And there have been other Dune games in the past, but nothing quite like this. This is an open world survival MMO that just happens to be based on Arrakis. So you're not taking up one of the, you know, the high ranking Atreides family members. You're really blazing your own path. You're telling your own story in an open world MMO that's like Dune Awakening. So that's really exciting. I'm super excited for that. We also had a couple of other games that were announced. We got some better looks at them. Callisto Protocol, which weirdly, this is not a game that necessarily piques my interest, but I've had a lot of people ask me about it since this trailer came out. It's a spiritual successor to Dead Space, which is, if you think about how Alien was a horror film that was told with a space window dressing, mm-hmm. this is more like body horror with a space window dressing. It's very intense, very violent, but a lot of people are really, really excited about this game. We've also got trailers for Hogwarts Legacy, which is coming out February 10th, 2023. It's a immersive open world role playing game set in the 1800s wizarding world, which puts players at the center of their own adventure. Again, not being, taking up one of the noted Harry Potter characters, but you're more playing your own character that's set inside that world.
Oh, that's interesting. OK, so have you looked at the trailer or anything? Is this a kids game or no?
I think kids could play it, but I don't think it's necessarily distinctly for kids.
It's for the adult Harry Potter fans.
I think it's for anyone in between. Yeah, I think they're absolutely trying to get the adult Harry Potter fan with Hogwarts Legacy. Some new Tales of the Borderlands. This is the Telltale-like spinoff of Gearbox's Borderlands series that's coming out October 21st this year, so that's pretty exciting. Destiny 2 got a new trailer for their fifth major expansion. That's called Lightfall. I know Matt Trevethan is a huge Destiny 2 player, so a lot of excitement around that expansion. A little game called Under the Waves, which is a deep sea exploration game. So if you're looking for something that isn't quite shooting and battling, this is something that definitely changes the pace, along with Goat Simulator 3.
I'm looking at this right now. This looks hilarious.
Goat Simulator 3. So this is the third in the series. And I'm really not sure how this game got started, but it sort of became a meme game, mm-hmm. Where, you know, there's not a whole lot of rules. You play a goat, and you can find crazy powers all across this map.
You do whatever you want as a goat.
Yeah, exactly.
Do we really need three editions of this game, though?
Apparently we do. That's coming out November 17th this year as well. And it's, you know, again, if you're just looking for something to turn your brain off and cause some mayhem, Goat Simulator 3 is going to be a really good way to do that. This one's really cool. Return to Monkey Island, coming out September 19th this year. It's the revival of the point-and-click adventure game Monkey Island, and it's been 22 years since the last edition of this game came out, which was in the 2000s, Escape from Monkey Island. So Monkey Island making a big return. I know there's a lot of fans out there of point and click, and that's a woefully underutilized genre that has just been lost to time. This is the other game that really, really caught my attention, and it's called The Lies of P. So Lies of P is really interesting. So a game came out this year that is still one of the hottest selling games. It's called Elden Ring, and it is from a developer from Software. They developed their own genre of game, and it's become its own genre of game called a Souls-like or Soulsborne. And what this is the gritty retelling of Pinocchio in a Victorian steampunk setting. Which is really cool. If you love Victorian steampunk, if you really, really like Soulsborne games, I think this is going to be one that you should absolutely have on your radar. It looks like it is mechanically very tight, and I'm really kind of looking forward to this gritty retelling of Pinocchio. I can't wait to see the whale. I can't wait to see the donkey. It's going to be great. I think it's going to be a whole lot of fun.
Really creative. I love that you brought this to the table, and also, as you said, the visuals are stunning. They're really well done.
Absolutely. And, you know, we had a lot of other stuff like Killer Clowns from Outer Space is getting a game. I don't know if you remember that movie from 1988. Not very many people do. I don't know why they're making a game out of it. And then the only other really weird thing I wanted to mention out of here was a Pikachu branded Mini Cooper for $80,000.
What?
Yeah, I don't know why you would brand a BMW Mini Cooper with Pokemon. I'm pretty sure that there's a very, you know, very small overlap in interests of, you know, people who would buy a Pokemon themed car and who actually have the $80,000 to be able to do that. And they also talked about Antura, which is a language learning application for children. This is really cool because it was first started for Syrian refugees who were displaced in the Syrian conflict to help teach local language of the country that they sought refuge in. It's now being used for Ukrainian children who have been displaced by the war with Russia. So very, very cool. And I just wanted to use this as an opportunity to talk about gaming conventions, because this is a thing that has started to wane really in the last 5 years. The E3, which stands for the Electronic Entertainment Expo, happens mostly every year out at the Los Angeles Convention Center. It started in 1995. And unfortunately, in the last couple of years, since 2020 and the pandemic, they have been unable to do a live event. But even before then, in 2019, they had major exhibitors dropping off the convention space. And, you know, I was lucky enough to go in 2017 and 2018, really kind of the last years that Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo were exhibiting booths there. And E3 is really in a unique space, and Gamescom is really sort of in this same unique space where Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo, and many of these larger game developers, Activision, Blizzard is a great example, Square Enix, they've all decided, they've all discovered that with the the ease of streaming, that it's just as effective for them to put on their own presentations through their own media channels as opposed to spending millions upon millions of dollars to have not just an exhibition, stage presentation, but also these huge elaborate booths that they set up at places like E3 and Gamescom. So we're starting to see these conventions shrink. And it's really kind of sad because they used to be great. They used to be like Christmas. They used to be like gamers would look forward to E3 like people look forward to Christmas, because you find out what's going to be on the docket for the next year or 2 years and what, you know, some of your favorite game companies are currently working on. And it's kind of sad that that's now been completely disrupted and kind of scattered to the winds. And it's got a lot of people asking, well, then what's the purpose of E3? Why even still have it if these major exhibitors aren't even going to bother to show up?
And, you know, I don't mean to mix these up, because these are different industries, different conventions. But when you think about something like Comic-Con in San Diego and all over the nation where it goes, they seem to be getting more and more popular. You hear
Absolutely.
More and more news coming out of these Comic-Con conventions, but not the same for the video game conventions.
It's not necessarily the same. I think that there, especially with things like E3, there have been a concentration on trying to make them industry events. Back in 2007, they had changed and downsized and rebranded, actually, the entire conference to the E3 Media and Business Summit, because the big three conference exhibitors, Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo, thought there were too many bloggers and small-time media players that were getting into the conferences, and so they felt like their time was being wasted. And as a result, attendance dropped dramatically, and it was bad for the ESA, the Electronic Software Association, which is the group that actually puts together E3. And since then, you know, there hasn't been a really good consensus of what direction do these conventions take. Do they start to shift and look a little bit more like PAX, which is a much more similar to a San Diego Comic-Con, where everyone's there for the event and there's panels and there's cosplay competitions and there's a whole bunch of stuff to do. And then there's one centralized area where exhibitors are showing off their wares and what's coming up.
Well, that would make more sense to me, just even a person who's not even a gamer, but that you would want to, as someone passionate about the gaming industry, meet your other gamers, make new friendships, be able to have an experience, not just here's some new games coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a marriage of both, because I think what people get really excited about and get really, you know, that really want, they want to see the value there is to find out the new games, the new stuff that's coming up. But I do think that there is a genuine desire to connect in person, like you were talking about. And yeah, some of it's networking, some of it's professional, you know, handshaking and things like that. But you know, for the most part, this is E3, when I went, at least, it felt like a big party that celebrated video games. And whether you were a developer that was exhibiting a video game that you've been working on for the last 3 years and you're just so excited to show it off in public for the first time, or whether you're, a podcast host like I was at the time that was, you know, that had grown up watching coverage of E3 on things like G4, it was like a big moment for me. Like it was sort of like, oh man, I'm here. I'm finally here. And it's kind of sad that we're starting to lose these things. So we've also got a couple of other conventions that I wanted to mention, because we have some local gaming conventions as well. PenguinCon, which is usually in April, is a Linux and science fiction convention. It's not a strictly gaming convention, but they do host cosplay events along with retro gaming and tabletop gaming, as well as UConn in Ann Arbor, which is usually in November. That started back in 1988 from a University of Michigan student organization called the Michigan Wargaming Club, and it's a weekend-long event that was held in the Michigan Union Building, but it's coming back October 7th through the 9th, and you can find out more info about that at UConn-Gaming. That's the letter UConn-Gaming.org.
So I can imagine, one last question for you, these gaming conventions are at least bringing money to local economies, right?
Absolutely.
And is that a big deal, I guess, here in Michigan?
I think I would have to ask a business owner, because I've never really been exposed to that side of convention, convention life. But I do think it's a great opportunity for, local stores, local businesses to exhibit their wares to a very dedicated subset of potential customers. And that's, I think, what you want, right? Like, as a business, that's what I think is kind of important, is to be like, hey, we're here. This is, this is what we're doing. And conventions certainly help that out a lot.
All right, Nate, before we let you go, what are you playing right now?
So I am continuing to have fun with my Steam Deck, but this week saw the release of Saints Row, the latest Saints Row game, which is absolutely chaotic fun, and I have been playing that most enthusiastically.
All right, thank you so much. Nate Bender is an in-house gaming journalist here at WDET. He is a colleague, and he hosts the podcast, the Daily Gaming News Podcast, Let's Play, and is the creator of Checkpoint Radio, the first syndicated radio show for esports. Nate, thanks for being on the One Update again.
Thanks for having me.
This is 101.9 WDET. We are Detroit's NPR station. Lots of good stuff coming up. We got the dance party ahead as well. And just after this, we'll get into Rob Reinhart's pick of the week. Brand new music from the great Lee Fields.